Today's reading comes from John 10, verses 14 to 21. That's on page 1081 in the Church Bibles. I am the Good Shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. And I have other sheep that are not of this fold. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice. So there will be one flock, one shepherd. For this reason the Father loves me, because I lay down my life, that I may take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again. This charge I have received from the Father. There was again a division among the Jews because of these words. Many of them said, "He has a demon and is insane. Why listen to him?" Others said, "These are not the words of one who is oppressed by a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind?"
Thanks, George. Good to have a South African accent at the front, wasn't it, just then? Fantastic. I'm a Welshman. And we're useless at rugby. But I was born and brought up in Kenya, that's near South Africa, so I was, I don't know who I was supporting last night. I wasn't really unhappy that England lost. Wales was the first nation that the English conquered, and they're still there, but I'm not. Good, just turn to the person sat next to you and say hello to them, and if you've not met them before, just greet them properly, and ask them what their name is, how long they've been coming here. Okay, let me throw a question in then. Throw a question again, carry on talking to the person sat next to you. You've got your Bible still open there. Just look at verse 16. What is the one crucial thing that makes someone a member of God's flock or not? Just carry on talking to the person sat next to you about the one thing there in verse 16 that makes a person a member of God's flock. It's great, isn't it? Some people have spotted it. It's on the screen behind me. It's all there. The clues are all there. I think it's just to come back to listen to me from the front then. I think it's true to say that there are very few atheists in the world, certainly in the West and in the UK. I think there are very few atheists. Most people think that there probably is a God or gods of some shape or of sorts. The big question is what is God like? I think the big question which is on a lot of people's mind is, can I actually know God or not? It's not whether he exists or not, but can I relate to him personally? I mean, how does the interaction, the interface between God and human beings actually come about, if it does? That's really the significant question, isn't it? It's not whether God exists or not, it's how do we relate to him? How do we know what he's like? What is his character? Who is God? The idea of a personal God is, I suppose, a little bit less popular certainly in British culture, and how we relate to him. So I want to just throw out some thoughts that kind of relate to our society and the culture around us. I'm going to quote an author, a scientist, a filmmaker, a comedian, and a pop star. So I think I just about cover everybody. First of all, the author, Thomas Hardy, described God as, I quote, "the dreamy, dark, dumb thing that turns the handle of this idle show." The dreamy, dark, dumb thing that turns the idol of this show, of this idle show. He's there, but not personal. You couldn't know him. The scientist of God is Einstein. He said this on one occasion: "Science without religion is lame. Religion without science is blind." But then in another instance, he says, "The idea of a personal God is quite alien to me and seems even naive." So yeah, a God, and find ways through religion of worshipping him and the like, but the idea of a personal God, Einstein found alien, in fact, perhaps a little bit naive. The filmmaker's Woody Allen. Woody Allen made a movie called Sleeper. And in it, the character that he acts, Woody acts, is cryogenically frozen and then thawed about for about 200 years. 200 years later, he's thawed out. And he's trying to talk to various people 200 years later to kind of like explain what life was like when he was alive 200 years back. And he's going through various photographs of various people describing who they are. And he describes Richard Nixon, and this is who Richard Nixon was. And he puts a photograph of the famous American evangelist Billy Graham in front of him. And his comment there is, claim to know God personally. In which case the movie audience all chuckle, ha 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 ha, Billy Graham claimed to know God personally. So again, it is sort of the sense of the movie is, yeah, God exists, but to know him personally, well, to claim that, that's a joke. The comedian Spike Milligan, some here from overseas won't have heard of Spike Milligan. At the end, perhaps at the international event afterwards, you can ask Sheila Furnaff or Bill, who Spike Milligan was, Steve over there, perhaps you can ask him. Paul and Nadine Woods, they're with us this evening, and they're going to be helping to run the Christianity Explored course in Chinese. Maybe Paul and Nadine can put you straight on Spike Milligan and his kind of humour. He was asked this: do you ever pray? And he said, yes, of course, desperately, all the time. Get me out of this mess. But I don't know who I'm praying to. So that's Spike Milligan. The pop star's Madonna. She was asked this by Andrew Neil, and it was in the Times newspaper. When you gather your dancers around you during the Blonde Ambition tour to pray before going on stage, who are you praying to? And Madonna says, who was I praying to? Everyone in the room and my idea of God. Andrew Neil asks, is there a God? She says, yes, there's my God. Everyone has their God. Question from Andrew Neil, tell me about him. Answer from Madonna, I can't describe him. So again, yeah, God's there, but we can't really know him. We can't really describe him. He's there, I pray to him, but I don't know who I'm praying to. You know, get me out of this mess. So there's a lot of uncertainty out there, isn't there, in our culture. That's quite clear, isn't it, from science to pop, to the comedians, to the filmmakers. There's a lot of uncertainty in our culture. There's a haze of doubt sometimes in our own hearts as well, isn't there, as to, you know, who God is and whether we can really know him or not. And so the reading that we heard from the South African accent a moment ago, the reading about Jesus' words come out they're a kind of very clear statement, aren't they, in this haze of uncertainty. Jesus' voice comes right on in and says, yes, actually, you can know God. I am God, and this is how you can relate to me. And this is how I will relate to you. And Jesus is incredibly clear. He's clear, and he's confident that God can be known. And the first thing I want to draw out from this brief section, we're going through John chapter 10 section by section, and if you want to hear, if you didn't hear the first couple of talks on John chapter 10, then you can get onto our website and log on and you can listen to them. You can listen to them there. But the first thing to draw out here is in verses 14 to 15 of verses 14 to 21, and it's simply this: the personal rule of the Shepherd King. If you want to know who God is, and if you want to relate to him, then you can relate to him personally as your Shepherd King. As your Shepherd King. It is a wonderful invitation. It is an incredible offer that Jesus makes in his incredible claim that he makes. But it's an invitation, it's an offer to join his flock. Verse 14, I am, Jesus says, I am the Good Shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me. I'm the Good Shepherd. I know my own, and they know me. We've seen in John 10 already how Jesus claims to be the living God who tends and cares for and provides and guides and protects his people like a shepherd, a good shepherd does for his sheep. And here Jesus offers a personal, close, deep, intimate friendship with his people. And verse 15 is even more striking, isn't it? Because you say, well, you know, what kind of analogy is Jesus going to use next? What kind of illustration is he going to use next to describe the intimacy of that relationship? And you kind of think, well, where's he going to go? And he actually goes to God. And as the Bible reveals who God is, it speaks of God being three and yet one: God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And Jesus goes to the intimate friendship between God the Father and God the Son to say, that's what it's like for my people when they begin to relate to me properly. That's exactly what verse 15 and goes on and says, isn't it? Just as the Father knows me and I know the Father. I'm the good shepherd. My sheep know me and I know them, just as the Father knows me and I know the Father. And that's a staggering thing, isn't it? What a wonderful offer. What a wonderful invitation to know God in his personal, intimate way. Jesus doesn't just drop into history out of nowhere. And as we've been going through this little series in John 10, we've just been going back every so often to some other sections in the Old Testament, part of the Bible, and just to pick up some of the ideas that he's picking up on and some of the prophecies, so the foretelling that looked forward to him coming. And Jesus was expected. He was told about it. He was told that he was coming. And here Jesus is picking some of the analogy up from one of the Bible's most famous songs. We sung just before George came and read our reading, a Bible song, Book of Psalms, Psalm 96. If you turn back to that book, it's halfway through the Bible, page 549, we'll turn to Psalm 23. Page 549, this is what Jesus is picking up. And I'm going to read it through, and I just want you to notice the intimate, personal relationship that God has with his people. But this chap David, way back here in the Old Testament, and that's actually where the idea of Jesus being the shepherd king comes from, because the kings in the Old Testament, the kings of God's people, the kings of the Israelites, were appointed to be shepherds of God's people. And here is King David, the shepherd, saying, well, actually, I relate to God as my shepherd. And it all looked forward to Jesus, the perfect shepherd king who would come, who would combine the kingship and the shepherding of God in one person. And just note the intimacy. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Incredible intimate, isn't it? Think God, and this David, as he speaks, he knows God, and he relates to God, and God does these things for him, and they're real. He experiences God in his life, and he's going to go on experiencing God and knowing God in this wonderful way forever. Verse 6, surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and when it ends, well, it'll go on. I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Incredibly intimate, and that's what Jesus is picking up. So we come back to John chapter 10, and just simply got to be asking us tonight, do we know God in that way? Is this the God you know? Do you know God in this personal, intimate way? Or is your God the God of formal religion? So often we can slip into thinking that God, the true God, is the God of formal religion. He's like the head teacher. Kind of slightly distant, you respect him, and you only end up meeting them when you're in the office for having done something really bad or really good. Is that your idea of God? Or is your God the God of mystery religion? You know, he likes to play hide and seek, and you can never really quite get your handle on him, because he's always slipping away from you. Now, sometimes that kind of God is safe, isn't he? Or she, or it. Kept at a safe distance, they don't quite make so many demands on you. That's perhaps the reason why some people will choose that kind of a God. Or is your God the God of fundamentalist religion, if I can put it that way? A harsh, tyrannical policeman who watches every move you make, and he's got his folks, disciples out there, who are just ready to cut you down. Is that the kind of God that you believe in? A God who loves to punish. He's cruel and always going to throw the rule book at you. Or is your God the God of magic? The God of magic has, Disney has deeply influenced many of us. The Pinocchio, the old man there, the woodcarver, he needs a miracle, doesn't he, at the start of the film Pinocchio? He needs a supernatural. There's his lifeless boy, crumpled, slumped in the room there, and he kneels, doesn't he, on his bed, and he folds his hands, and he looks up to heaven, and in his soft Italian accent. Now, he doesn't pray. No, he wishes upon a star. And in the first film, you know, that Disney's producing with the cartoonist Snow White, you know, I'm wishing, she's there by the wishing well. Vision for the handsome prince to turn up, and he hears, and whatever it is, the magical thing, you don't know it personally, but it responds. You know, the little boy comes to life and the handsome prince hears. Is that your idea of God? Impersonal magic, the one you just hope was like the slot machine, you put your wish in and out comes what you want. Or is your God the God of agnostic literature, of Thomas Hardy, dark, dumb, irrelevant, unknowable? Well, the invitation of Jesus Christ is the invitation of the God who knows you, who loves you personally, not just the person sat next to you, or behind you, or in front of you, you, personally, and invites you into friendship, relationship with him. And as we enter that friendship with him, he will be with you. He will hear you. He will listen to you. He will answer you. He died for you. Billy Graham was once asked, the American evangelist, how do you know God exists? And his answer was, well, I was only talking to him this morning. That's the kind of relationship we can have with God. And we can say that with full confidence. Why? I was only talking to him this morning. Is that amazing? It's not hollow. He meant it. We can mean it. Know it to be true too. Well, if that was just it, just a personal relationship with God, it would be rather indulgent. And, if plenty of folks here from the East, Far East here, and you'd be up at the end, you'd very rightly accuse me of having a very westernised, individualistic God. So it doesn't end there, thankfully. verse 16, which is the second thing that I want to draw out. The God that invites us, the Lord Jesus Christ that invites us into this wonderful relationship with him. Yes, he is the personal ruler of the Shepherd King. But secondly, his flock is the global flock of the Shepherd King. That's verse 16. It's not just us personally. It's everybody, everywhere. Look at verse 16, Jesus goes on. And I have other sheep that are not of this fold. And he was specifically there talking about, talking to some folks that are uptight with him in chapter 9 for healing a man. He's talking to first century Jews. And he said, if I've got other folks in my flock, they're not just first century Jews. They're all over the place. Verse 8, I have other sheep that are not of this fold. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice. And so coming back to that question that I asked you to look at the start, verse 16, the key thing that makes someone a member of God's flock is that they listen to Jesus' voice. They listen to the shepherd's voice. It's not about age. If you come along this evening and you look around, you think, it'd be slightly odd, isn't it? And most people think that church and religion and Christianity is for older people. And you might come in here and think, well, hang on, this church is for younger. It's not. We need lots more older folks amongst us. And we need a lot more younger people. It is for us all. It's not about age. It's not about gender, is it? In verse 16, does that mention gender? It's not about genetics. It's not race. It's not social class, it's not colour, it's not nationality, it's not religious pedigree, it's not first century Jewish, it's not first century. Well, it is, but it's every century. And yes, it is Jewish, but it's Jewish and everybody else. It's a personal relationship, it's inclusive of everybody. People from all over the world, God, the Shepherd King, ruler of all people, everywhere. One shepherd with one vast, international, multilingual, multiracial flock. That first song that we were learning this evening, the final verse goes on, or said this: with a shout, you rose victorious, Jesus rose victorious, wrestling victory from the grave, and ascended into heaven, leading captives in your wake. Now you stand before the Father, interceding for your own. And then the final couple of lines: from each tribe and nation and tongue and nation, you are leading sinners home. The shepherd leading people from all over home. Fantastic song, wasn't it? To start with this theme that we've got this evening. And only one criteria for membership: listening to his voice. Listening to Jesus as he speaks to us. Yeah, maybe you've got a growing awareness of the pointlessness of your life, and you just realise, well, hang on, what is life for? Maybe a growing fear. A real fear. Maybe a fear that isn't real, but nevertheless it's there. Well, maybe those things are the voice of the shepherd speaking to you and saying, well, look, get uncomfortable with the right things about being uncomfortable over, and start getting comfortable with the right person to be comfortable with. The living God. Listen to the voice of the shepherd calling you by your name. He's searching for you. He's a shepherd. He comes looking for lost sheep. Now, don't hesitate to respond to the voice. You know, previous philosophical history is not a bar. Previous behavioural history is not a bar. Previous creedal history is not a bar. Your colour, class, country, creed, not a bar. It's for us all. His voice, one voice, and sheep from all over the world. Personal rule of the Shepherd King, the global flock of the Shepherd King, one voice calling all people from everywhere. So what is the most significant thing that the voice says to us? Yeah, so the Lord may be speaking to you about your own life and your own, speaking to your own conscience, but quite specifically the voice of the shepherd speaks of sacrifice, and that's the third thing I want to draw out: the sacrificial choice of the Shepherd King. That's verse 17 and 18. This is what the voice would say to us tonight, is saying to us tonight, God's word, verse 17 and 18. I know there are some folks here that love literature and love poetry and prose and love to see a structure. There is a structure. In fact, much of John's Gospel is written in a kind of like a chiastic structure. There's chiasms here, there and everywhere. By that, it's kind of like a sandwich, for those that don't really know that much about literature, where there's a bread, a filler, and then there's the bread again, okay? And there's bread, filler, bread in verses 17 to 18. The bread is the Father at the top and the bottom of the sandwich, and in the middle is the Son. And so verse 17 says, for this reason the Father loves me. That's the start of verse 17, the first section of verse 17. And then the last section of verse 18, this charge I've received from the Father. So why does the Father love the Son? And what is the charge that the Father's given to the Son? Well, it's that the Son dies. So the filler, the middle, verse 17 and 18, because I lay down my life, that I may take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again. See, the point is that God is all for our rescue. The Father loves the Son because the Son died. And the Son obeyed the Father by coming to die. It was all God's will. It's the Son's choice. I've got all complete authority to lay down my life and take it up again. No one take it from me unless I allow it. And my choice is that I lay it down for you. The sacrificial choice of the shepherd king. It's very clear indeed, isn't it, what Jesus is saying? The voice of the shepherd, the thing to hear. I mean, there's so much noise in our culture, haven't we? So much static. You know, we've got to, at some point, and maybe tonight is the night you need to do this, is to fade out all the other noise. All the things that are in your mind and questions you've got and things that are attracting you, the magnets that are pulling you in this way and that way and the other way, and the voices, all the voices that are saying do this, do that, do the other, fade them out and listen to this voice. I lay down my life for you. Do you hear anyone else say that? I chose to. Any other God say that? Materialism say that? No. Listen to that voice. I chose to lay down my life for you. Who's speaking? It's the Shepherd King. And one of the most intriguing books, just to kind of like help draw this to our minds a little bit more this evening, is this book here. It's the most intriguing books that I've read recently. It's fascinating. And I have to say, it's not the kind of book that I would pick off the shelf to have a read. But it is it's become a precious book to me because I know the author. The author gave it to me, the author signed it for me, and the author's here in this room tonight. It is a unique book. Have you ever come across a book about a garden party before? Just be honest. Anyone here come across a book about a garden party before? No, you're like me, I hadn't either. This is a book about a garden party. And if you're going to have a book written about a garden party, the people at the party have got to be important, haven't they? And the person laying on the party has got to be pretty important too. That's true. Derek Hunt, John Mulholland written this book. It is a book about a garden party given by King George in 1920. And is a party, as it says on the front of the book, for heroes. And His Majesty's Garden Party for the recipients of the Victoria Cross. And that was on the 26th of June 1920. The Victoria Cross, if you've not come across that before, the Victoria Cross was introduced by Queen Victoria. To quote the book, to officers and to other ranks of the Navy and Army, they didn't have an Air Force in those days, who were serving the presence of the enemy, should have performed some signal act of valour or devotion to their country. 1,356 Victoria Crosses have been awarded over the years since its introduction. To honour those that were still living, the Victorious Cross members who are still living in various across all conflicts, King George V held this reunion party. Where do you hold a reunion party for heroes like this? As the book says, there's only one place you could do that, Buckingham Palace. The best place to be honoured, if you're British. Who sends out the invitation? Well, the King. None other than the King sends out invitation. And he sends out railway warrants so no one has to pay for the expenses to get there. And you're willing, you know, put you up for the night as well. And of course the men, I mean, these men were willing to give their lives. So many of the folks who received the Victoria Cross did. As quote, a newspaper from the time says, 1920 was a tough year economically. And so these fellows are willing to give all for their country. And of course they're going to dress up for the King, aren't they? And so here's a newspaper quote. There are many men who, though their suits may be fairly decent, will have to have had to buy new collars and ties and little extras of that kind in order to look smart for the occasion. quite a number of them will have, and this is interesting, will have gone without dinners during the past few days to make themselves presentable. And they did. It was a great honour. And one of the things that I found really striking reading this was the kindness, the interest, the care, the personability of the king. Yeah, he met every single one of the fellows that were there and spoke to them. And this is a quote, one of them said this, speaking of the king, he had an amazing memory for faces. We were all put at our ease with a hearty handshake, no distinction being shown to rank. When His Majesty questioned me as to my exploits, I was telling him the story and was surprised when he finished it off for me. He knew. I said, he's a good king. I like that. I found that of warm to that. But today, tonight, at the invitation, the voice of the king, it is there. And it's the invitation of God the King, the God of all people. And the invitation is to you personally. And He has paid for your ticket. Everything's ready. He invites you into a personal relationship with Him. He invites you to meet the King. And one day we will all stand before Him. And where the difference is we won't be heroes. Every single one of us will stand before Him as those who've rebelled, who've rejected Him, who've ignored Him. And amazingly, we meet Him just as King George V met those guys who'd won the Victoria Cross. And that moment comes, and you might be thinking Christianity is what we do for God. It's not. Christianity is about what God does for us. So we stand before the King and the tables are turned. It's not our exploits for King and country. It's our King's exploits for us. That's what we hear about. Isn't that a humbling moment that every single one of us are going to have to face? Isn't it humbling now? The King invites us to a party where he's the hero. And we get all the privileges and benefits. Isn't that astounding? Isn't it wonderful? How can you say no to that voice? It's a bit like if one of these guys came to our church saying, I don't want to know you. It's like, that would be rude, wouldn't it? And crass. I mean, willing to give everything for us? You wouldn't do that, would you? To, a guy who won the Victoria Cross. Do it the King who died for you, would you? Well, some did. Verse 20, verse 19, this is the immediate context. Again, division among the Jews because of these words. Many of them said, he has a demon and is insane. Why listen to him? Mad. Maybe you do think Jesus is mad. Maybe there are questions you still got. Well, come back next week, because there's opposition to Jesus, and we're going to hear about the opposition. So if you think Jesus is not all there and you're against what we've been hearing tonight, then come back next week and struggle with some of those issues a bit more. Verse 21, some said, no, he's not mad. He healed a guy, chapter 9, and madmen don't do that. And there's a sense actually that Jesus is worth getting known. So verse 21, others said, these are not the words of one who is oppressed by a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind? And no. So let's engage with him a little bit more. And that may be where you are tonight. This last Tuesday we started Christianity Explored, Explained. The one that Tanya and my wife and I are leading in English. It's a 6-week course. You don't have to know anything about the Bible. You don't have to know anything at all. You won't be asked to do anything embarrassing at all. And tonight, I suppose, the last opportunity to sign up. If you miss this week, then you miss two of the really first three fundamental kind of things that we're doing about Jesus in the first 3 weeks. So if you want to join Christianity Explored, join tonight and come on Wednesday this week and carry on thinking about Jesus a little bit more. and responding to that voice. Verse 42, just moving on a bit, and many believed in him there. Some did believe, following the discussion we're going to hear about next week. And that may be where you are this evening. But yeah, actually, you want to say, I hear the voice of Jesus, and I want us to respond. I want to come and say, yes, I'm going to follow you. You are my shepherd king. And if that is you, then please don't walk away without letting somebody know, let James know, or myself, or Katie, if a student, Katie was speaking earlier on. And for those of us who do know him already as a shepherd king, what a privilege, let's never forget that. What a wonderful privilege it is. Now, you've got worries in the week ahead. All sorts of concerns I have for us as a church, all positive about growth and shortage of money and all that sort of stuff. Worries? Psalm 23, the Lord's my shepherd, I shall not want. Feel spiritually dry? The Lord's my shepherd, he restores my soul. Wondering about the pathway ahead and God's guidance? Well, the Lord, the good shepherd, wants to guide you in paths of righteousness. That's the most important thing. Not what you end up doing with your career, but being righteous and right with God. He'll lead you. He'll lead you to the most important things in life. Facing fears, facing death? Their promise is, I will be with you through the valley of the shadow of death. And the promise is to dwell with him into eternity. That is wonderful, isn't that, the privilege we have. Let's spend a moment of quiet, shall we, and just think through how it's appropriate for us tonight, as personal, as people, individuals, to respond to the voice of the Good Shepherd.